there's a man who leads a life of anger, and every day he gets a little stranger. With every word he speaks, he yells, he whines, he shrieks. Odds are he won't understand tomorrow. Right-wing talk show host, ignorant talk show host. They've given you a time slot and taken away your brain. There's a group who spend their time complaining. It's bad enough they think that's entertaining. But their lenses are so skewed that all you can conclude, they're desperate for some IQ they can borrow. A rigid talk show host, batty talk show host, we're giving you a platform. It's time you were diagnosed. Right-wing talk show host, ignorant talk show host. They've given you a time slot and taken away your brain. And where the easy answers you may find, simple thoughts, they come from simple minds. So notice who they blame and examine all their claims. Odds are you'll see through all their illogic. Right-wing talk show host, pompous talk show host, we've given you a forum, but you're still as deaf as a post. Right-wing talk show host.
All right, we are back on the Andy Finn Show, and that's Right-Wing Talk Show Host, lyrics by yours truly, but production, post-production, and vocals by John Clark, a professor, associate professor, tenured at the University of Kentucky, teaches telecom and other things, and also audio production. He is a musician and a singer, and those of you who listen to the show regularly know I have John on occasionally. We've done a whole series on music and on technology, a couple of series on technology over the years, but John is going to start joining me more regularly beginning next week, and if this works out, he's much more than a sidekick, because John is more than my intellectual equal, more than my speaking equal, more than my radio equal, and more than my technology, production, and storytelling equal. He's just an amazing guy. So we're going to have to rename this the John and Andy Show, perhaps. But starting next week, you'll hear from John Clark and not just his singing voice. Let me wrap up the Democratic field before we move on and say a couple of things. One is Barack Obama. Okay, so I'm reserving judgment. My knee-jerk reaction was to say he's not qualified to be president. 2 years in the Senate, come back when you grow up, big boy. But, you know, Lincoln only had 2 years in the Senate when he was elected president. And if I remember right, that worked out okay. Well, there was that Civil War and all, and then he died at Ford's Theater. But except for those things, it worked out pretty good. Well, there was Reconstruction. In any case, Lincoln's one of our greatest presidents. So you really need judgment, I think, in the position more than experience. you know, Bush on paper looked like he had enough experience, you know, 6 years as governor. But if we'd looked more carefully, I think we'd have seen, as many of us did see, that he wasn't everything he was cracked up to be. But in the case of Barack, he's pretty level-headed, I have to tell you. What I've heard from him so far, he's coherent, he makes sense, he strings together complete sentences, he uses English words. He has a number of things over the current president. But I'm not too worried about Barack right now. But the other guy who's worth mentioning here is Bill Richardson. You know, these minor candidates don't get much of a hearing. I said that I could support, or that I would support Joe Biden. I would love to see Joe Biden as president. Or Chuck Hagel on the Republican side. But they're too moderate, and they're too reasonable, and they're too much like statesmen, I think, to get that position. But Bill Richardson's another interesting guy who probably doesn't have much of a chance. He's an underdog. He's just announced, and of course he's swamped by the news of Hillary and Obama. But he'll only get 1 or 2% in the polls over the next few months, I suspect. But he has several things going for him. You know, when he's the governor of New Mexico, when you talk to people about him, one of the first things you hear when people talk about him, like on TV, is he's a Hispanic. He'd be the first Hispanic president, and he has a chance to get the Hispanic vote, etc. But he's a lot more than that, and people sell him short when they bill him as just a Hispanic. First of all, in addition to being a governor, he's former Secretary of Energy, I believe, and so he has dealt with OPEC, and he's dealt with the Middle East, and he's dealt with a variety of our allies and our foes on energy issues. He also served as UN ambassador, so he has foreign policy experience. He's dealt with a variety of countries, and he knows a lot of these people in the Middle East and elsewhere. He knows people in the hotspots. He's dealt with North Korea. He's dealt with Syria. He's dealt with Iran in different ways. He's also a corporate kind of a guy, not just the executive experience in New Mexico as governor, but I believe he was in charge of a corporation at some point. I could be making this up. I forget if I'm mixing my resumes. There are so many people running for president now, I'm getting them confused. There's going to be like 20 names. Now, some of them will filter out here, but more than 10 people on each side have announced they're thinking about it. It's really quite amazing. It's quite an amazing year. A year, of course, this isn't the election year. The election isn't until next year. That's the other piece, is how early this whole thing is starting. Man, I got to tell you, the idea that all these people are announcing in January before Bush's State of the Union, you know, Bush is in office until January 20th of 2009. Well, we're now in 2007, so he's got 2 years left as of 2 days ago. So maybe the announcements are timed for that, but we are 2 years, not ahead of the election, but ahead of the swearing in of the next president. And the campaign's in full swing. And in fact, it's been gearing up for several months. It's really quite remarkable how early we're starting all this. You know, this the situation with Bush here is a lame duck, and that's essentially what he is right now. He doesn't have much credibility. There aren't people listening to him on a lot of things. He can still get his way on some things, but he'll be compromising a lot on a variety of issues because he does not have the votes to do anything by himself. But to the extent that he is a lame duck already, it may be that the campaign will start that much earlier. You know, it kind of makes you yearn for a parliamentary system, because when something goes sour and you know you got the wrong guy in the job, in the parliamentary system, you just have a vote of no confidence, you hold elections, and if the country's ready to move on, they move on, and that guy can stick to his position. Just the country isn't going to support him anymore. In our situation, we got a guy who's sticking to his position, and he gets 2 more years, whether we like it or not. Now, the country sent a message last November, and the people who I heard say that were Republicans. After the election, the Republicans were the ones that came out and said the senators that lost, or the senators that didn't have to run but saw their buddies lose, they were the ones that came out and knew that the voters had spoken, and had spoken about Iraq, and they said as much. The only guy that hasn't gotten it is Bush. And, of course, the scary piece of this is Bush's motivation here for the surge. So let me move on to the president and to his surge. As you know, the president wants to send, is sending 21,000 more troops to Iraq. He got all kinds of advice, basically, from the Iraq study group. It was time to start withdrawing and also engaging other people. Talk to other people. Get Iran and Syria to help stabilize the area. It should be in their interest. Well, Bush is not going to talk to Iran and Syria. He believes that the ability to talk to his administration is a gift that they bestow on you if you behave well. That's not how most people see diplomacy. You know, during the height of the Cold War, we talked to the Soviet Union. In fact, we talked to them more and more. That's what ended the Cold War in many ways, was the fact we opened up things more and more. And traditionally, you talk to your enemies. You know, the old adage, keep your friends, hold your friends close and your enemies closer. Know what they're doing. Know what they're thinking. Don't leave a lot of room for mistrust. Unfortunately, that is not the approach of this administration. So the decider came up with the surge. Actually, other people proposed the surge. There were Democrats that were saying just a few months ago, Democrats in the House and the Senate, or at least the House, I think, that said a few months ago, we should have more troops, 20,000 more troops. I think they said it, some of them, disingenuously, because they didn't think there was any chance that we would send more troops, that the message of the election was so clear it wouldn't happen. So a guy like McCain, I'm going to say McCain took this stand, but these three Democrats did apparently, and now they are going to vote, now they've come out against the surge because Bush is for it. At least to his credit, of course, McCain hasn't done that. But these guys are bending with the political wind. They never dreamed Bush would call their bluff, but he did. Because the Iraq study group basically said, you got a mess on your hands. You need to start diplomacy and talking to the people you don't want to talk to. You need to start withdrawing troops. Well, they also said that in limited circumstances, with a limited purpose, we could see where a surge might possibly work. Bush jumped on that. And early on, he went for the surge. The Washington Post, by that I mean he decided back in December to ignore the military's advice and a variety of other people's advice, including the Iraq study group. The Washington Post had a great analysis article in just yesterday's paper, the Sunday paper, on the review of Iraq that Bush put together. You know, as the Iraq study group was coming out with a report, they took about 9 months. Bush asked a variety of parts of the government to put out their own report so that he wouldn't be looking like he was taking advice from this committee, which I understand why he did that. But he basically saw the Iraq study group as showing him how to manage defeat. But he doesn't want to manage defeat. And when we come back, we'll talk about that and why it may be the only way to go.